Do we have Josh with us yet?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Hey, Josh.
So you
have a very interesting story, and you and your friend Ryan had it all, it seemed, a while ago, I guess a few years ago. You were in your 20s, probably still are. You had it all, a six-figure income, big houses, fancy cars, all the expensive toys to go along with it. By all outward signs, you were living the American dream, and yet you say you were not really so happy. What happened?
Yeah, you said it very succinctly. I think that was exactly it. You know, I'm 31 now, actually, and I've never been happier, but it kind of took getting everything I ever wanted to realize that everything I ever wanted wasn't what I actually wanted. You know, I had the stereotypical American dream life, you know, everything you just mentioned, even the white picket fence, literally. I spent most of my 20s chasing this thing called happiness through things, through trying to accumulate more things, through society's idea of success. And in fact, everyone around me thought I was successful, told me I was successful, often told me I had everything figured out. You know, I heard that a lot. You've got to figure it out for being so young. And I climbed the corporate ladder through my 20s and ended up making really good money, but I was spending even better money. And that equation never really works. And the more I chased happiness, the further away it seemed to get. And I realized that something had to change in my life because I wasn't happy. In fact, I was getting the things that were supposed to bring me happiness, all the stuff that was around me sort of brought me the opposite. It brought me debt and stress and discontent and overwhelm and anxiety and all of these things that I certainly don't associate with happiness now.
So you guys packed up, left your native Ohio, and moved to a remote cabin in Montana. What are you trying to be, the Unabomber?
We were kind of thinking Thoreau, but with Wi-Fi.
Not the Unabomber. Okay.
It's funny because it didn't really happen exactly. I mean, that is a radically attenuated version of it, but. We basically spent a lot of our 20s, Ryan and I, I've known him since we were, you know, fat little fifth graders, and
you definitely are not that. You guys are two good-looking dudes, I can see from your pictures, so that's why I'm laughing at the thought of you being fat fifth graders.
You know, it's funny. I used to weigh 70 pounds more than I weigh now, and I found that I was forsaking. I forsook the most important things in my life, and health was certainly one of them. Not only was I fat, but I really felt like crap all the time because of the junk that I ate. I just didn't pay attention to my health, didn't exercise. I forsook my important relationships. Yeah. Towards the end of 2009, my mother died. She died of cancer, and within a month, my marriage ended, and like I said, because I was working 70 or 80 hours a week every week at this very so-called impressive job, I didn't pay much attention to the relationships that were closest to me. So when my marriage ended, that's really when I started questioning sort of all of the things in my life. I had to look myself in the mirror and say, is this what you've been waiting for all your life? And clearly it wasn't because I wasn't happy. And so that was back in Dayton, Ohio. I basically started simplifying my life back then. It took about 8 months and started just questioning the possessions in my life and questioning what I bring into my life and what really adds value to my life. And I found that most of the time it wasn't the things that were around me. It was other things that made me happy.
I have to congratulate you on your wisdom and finding, such wisdom earlier in life. Usually it takes a midlife crisis to have this kind of impact on someone. And, doing it in your late 20s, even more impressive and good for you because you've got, decades ahead of you to live in a way that really matters. And how do you feel now about your life?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of had a midlife crisis, I guess. That all happened when I was 28. And, I'm 31 now. I make less money than I did when I was 19. I made pretty good money when I was 19. I was in sales, but still, I make less money than I did back then. I've never been happier. You know, and what that tells me, as long as I can cover, the basics in my life, and I can have enough money to live, I'm no longer living to make money. So I feel great.
Wow, and you wrote a book about your experience, and you talk about a 21-day journey to minimalism. It's a step-by-step guide to uncluttering your life. One of the things you do is have a packing party on day three. How does that work?
You know, it was interesting. I told you I spent about 8 months decluttering my life, and I found there were a lot of benefits, but I didn't really talk to a lot of people about it. But one day Ryan approached me. He said, "Hey, I want to take you out to lunch. I want to talk to you about something." And he had gone down a similar path that I had gone down, and you know, he wasn't happy either. And this term happiness kept coming up. And that summer, it was summer of 2010. He said, "Hey, I need to ask you something. Why the hell are you so happy?" And I was kind of blown away. I could see that finally the benefits that I had been enjoying inside were showing on the outside from simplifying my life. So I told him about this thing called minimalism and said, "Hey, this might be good for you too, because you've got a lot of things, and you know, you've been chasing this American dream that I was chasing, and I think there's a different way. And let me show you this thing called minimalism." So what we did is we came up with this idea of a packing party, and really what that was we were pretending that we were going to pack up all the stuff in his condo, a huge condo, as if he was moving, right? He had this three-bedroom condo with two living rooms, and so we literally boxed up everything like he was moving. All of his kitchen stuff, his utensils, his clothes, covered up all the furniture as if to make it inaccessible. And for 21 days, he unpacked only the things that he needed. And he found at the end of those 3 weeks that he still had about 80% of his stuff boxed up. And that was a big revelation, because all the stuff that was around him that was supposed to bring him happiness obviously wasn't doing its job, because it was still sitting there. So he got rid of that stuff, either sold or donated the vast majority of his things, and realized, you know, there are things, material possessions in his life that add value, and I think that's the same for all of us, but just accumulating for the sake of accumulating doesn't really add any value to our lives.
I've had that experience. We've moved a couple of times in the last 5 years, and you know, if you're smart, you pack up, you know, the kitchen stuff first that you really need to cook, and your toothbrush, and you know, a little bit of clothing, and then you find that after that, you really don't want to deal with the rest of it until you need an item, if you really do. And I always love how, you know, the beginning of moving into a new place, you've got so much space, and as you gradually unpack and set up, you know, your home and your life, how things get cluttered. And I don't love that part so much, because you realize, gosh, I kind of liked it when it was just more open.
You know, there are a lot of really great benefits, and I think that's one of them, the side benefits of there's not a lot of stuff around. You know, I think if you came over to my house right now, you wouldn't say, "Wow, this guy, Joshua, is a minimalist." You would probably say, "He's really tidy," because I don't have a bunch of stuff to clutter up the place. And so one of the benefits is that it's a lot more aesthetically pleasing, but also it takes a lot less time to clean. When I used to have a, you know, three-bedroom house with a full basement and a yard and all these things, it would take me an entire day to take care of all of my household kind of chores, and it certainly doesn't take the same amount of time now.
It's funny, I just saw a cartoon on Facebook in the last few hours. I have to try to describe it. Maybe you've seen it. It's a picture of a, you know, cartoon character with a little thought bubble, and there's all this stuff cluttered inside the bubble, and it's mind full of stuff. And the next one is a character with, you know, trees and a couple of birds and a meadow, and it's mostly an open bubble, and it's mind full. You know, the distinction between a mind full of stuff and a house full of stuff, and the clarity of mindfulness.
Yes, amen. You know, it's really, for me, minimalism has never been about deprivation. It's been about living more deliberately, living more intentionally, and so living more mindfully, ultimately, and just asking the right questions of yourself. And honestly, it's hard at first, and that's why that 21-day journey, that was sort of the first thing we wrote about. And Ryan and I realized, hey, we're not crazy. Let's throw up a website, and that's when we started theminimalists.com. We decided, hey, maybe other people can find value in this journey the same way that we found value in simplifying our lives.
Wow. And what happened over the holidays this past month?
We went on a little what we call the holiday happiness tour. It's a very difficult time for a lot of people. People get very stressed out. There was a survey I saw recently from one of a major newspaper. It said that 74% of people would rather go without the whole gift-giving process, the obligatory gift-giving process at the holidays, because it's so angst-ridden now. And so we went out on this tour. It was a 10-city tour, and we just went out and talked to people. And we were fortunate enough. We've been really fortunate over the last couple of years. The website has grown. We've got a decent readership now. And we had about 1,400 people show up in 10 different cities. And we just talked about, you know, our message and living more deliberately, gifting experiences instead of maybe material possessions, and how that's so much more meaningful to someone than, you know, a new necktie or some material thing that you feel obligated to give.
So there's personal satisfaction, and also not only, you know, angst-ridden, but debt-ridden. We are all accruing too much financial debt individually and as a country. And then there's also the planet. Do you talk much about, how we're, using to death, squeezing the life out of the planet, really, by, using everything we can possibly turn and manufacture into something else and then end up throwing it in a landfill after a not necessarily very long lifespan of any given product, and how that kind of mindless consumption can really cause problems for our planet?
It definitely can. You know, it's one of my favorite questions that a lot of reporters and different folks have asked is, well, and it's usually almost an accusatory question at first. Well, you don't think everyone can be a minimalist because, wouldn't society collapse then? My first answer to that is usually, what if hypothetical questions didn't exist? But
gosh, it might make our economy weak. Well, guess what? We've got a very weak, struggling economy now. Maybe we should rebuild it with a transition to greener technology and energy and, more emphasis on satisfaction and less on stuff. That might actually strengthen our economy.
I totally agree. It seems now that we're trying to fix the problem with the problem. We hear this thing stimulate the economy all of the time. And to me, that, I can do elementary arithmetic, and it just doesn't add up. And so I've noticed that one of the bigger benefits here is that, I consume less, which means I consume less stuff. I use less plastic. And on an individual level, and that adds up to a pretty large number when more and more people are living this lifestyle. But my answer to the original question about could everyone live like a more minimalist lifestyle, and my answer is yes, they could, but also it couldn't work the other way around. We are all familiar with the stat that if everyone else lived like the Western world, we would need six Earths in order to have enough resources for everyone. We use too many resources, and I think that's pretty clear. And a more minimalist lifestyle would simply allow us to use our planet in a more responsible way.
I agree, and I'm going to go back to the question because actually you've clearly given this a lot of thought, and I get asked the same question too. Well, if people bought less stuff and we were less consumptive, wouldn't that bring down our American economy? And I hear what you're saying about planetarily, it would be much better if we left more resources for a more equitable distribution around the rest of the planet. But what about that? I mean, have you guys thought about how we could keep our economy strong with this kind of message really being accepted on a widespread basis? Because I think a lot of people are realizing we need almost a wholesale shift in our infrastructure and the way our economy is built. We're not sustainable, but we can't just change things here and there, tweak them incrementally. We really need to look at the bigger picture. Just wondered if you have any thoughts on how we could stay strong in America and get back to our values that really do make us happier.
Yeah, see, I'm not against consumption. What I'm against is irresponsible consumption. For the longest time, I did things because I was supposed to do it. I bought things because I was supposed to buy those things. I built my first house at age 22, which I look back now, that seems ridiculous, especially because it was, you know, a three-bedroom house with, you know, a big yard, two-car garage, and all these things I didn't need. And it was irresponsible of me, but I did it because it was what I was supposed to do. And maybe I was a few years ahead of you know, other people, but that's okay. It's the thing I'm supposed to do. I'm just doing it a little bit early. And really, all I was doing is I wasn't living very deliberately. And that's all I'm talking about. There are a lot of things that still add value to my life. You know, I still spend money in our economy, but I do so deliberately. And I support local businesses. I support people who you know are in my community now. And I think that's incredibly important. It's just not about buying things just for the sake of buying them, though. It's about doing it, you know, more intentionally.
So are you and Ryan housemates in this cabin in Montana?
We are. So it's a little experiment that we've been doing. We decided we're both working on two separate books right now. And so we wanted to go somewhere where we could really hunker down and do the whole, you know, Thoreau thing. And so that's what we're doing now. We're actually going to end up in Missoula in February. So we'll be in a more a city-like environment. But we've done this cabin thing since October. And, you know, it's gone really well. I've learned a lot about myself, and I've never lived with Ryan, but and that's been a heck of an experiment in and of itself. And we've actually written quite a bit about it on our website as well.
And when time comes for you guys to find partners, I assume you're not involved that way, but maybe you are. But is it going to be a priority for you to find somebody who shares your values?
Yeah, I think that's a priority with any relationship. You know, I've found that whether it's a friendship or an intimate relationship, you know, if there's someone that I dedicate a lot of my time to, I think values and beliefs are incredibly important. And it doesn't mean that we have to agree on everything, but it does mean that we need to have similar values, similar belief structures or belief templates in order to get along most of the time. We can be appreciably different people, different personalities, but if our values or our beliefs are radically different, it makes for a very difficult relationship.
So when did the book come out?
The book came out last year, and it's done fairly well. I've been really fortunate.
And let people know how they can find it. The Minimalist, I believe, is what it's called, and probably on Amazon.
It is definitely on Amazon. You can get it for in print or on Kindle. There's also an audiobook version, I believe. And you can find all the information. We make it really simple. It's all on our website, theminimalists.com.
Were you guys influenced at all by No Impact Man?
Definitely know about it. I wouldn't say we were influenced up front, but it's been a huge sort of revelation to me that you know, a lot of things that you think aren't possible are possible when you tell yourself that they are.
Well, there's a lot of creativity in necessity, right? And if you set these really admirable, ambitious goals for yourself, it's amazing what the human mind can find, especially, you know, in this land of so much, you know. And I love the message, which is really that less is more, less stuff is more happiness often, especially if it's really about mindfulness, as you're saying. Do you meditate as well?
I have my own form of meditation, what I call meditation. I walk a lot. I walk about 8 miles a day, and that's the way that I clear my mind and just sort of unplug from everything and walk. And I get some good exercise from that, obviously, as well. And that's my form of meditation.
It's also a natural form of exercise because instead of getting in your car to go to the gym to get on a treadmill and burn electricity and CO2, you're out there in nature and yet burning up calories and getting the mind exercise as well. So that sounds like a good piece of your prescription there.
Yes, definitely.
For a better quality of life and for the planet as well. I really want to thank you for being available on short notice today. I really have enjoyed the interview, and maybe we'll get your partner in crime, Ryan, on as well in the near future and check back with you guys, because I really want to share the message. And hopefully people will find your book and find some, you know, some answers for themselves in their own lives. And I guess that is part of the reason you did all this.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've been speaking with Joshua Fields Milburn. His partner is Ryan Nicodemus, and they have not only written a book called The Minimalist, but Living a Meaningful Life. They are living it in a big way, and they're writing about it and talking about it. So thanks for all you listeners who have joined me for this edition of The Green Front. If you joined us midway, you can find archives at trn.fm and also on my website at thegreenfront.com. Have a great green week. See you next time.